Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Hello and welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hello.
And Mr. Bryce Castillo.
That's me, number three.
As it has always been.
I found an interesting article, was on Medium. And of course, there was a much more attention-grabbing article on Medium last week from Jeff Bezos, but I don't need to get into that. The headline for this was, and this was actually came from Hacker News, which is just a great source for stuff, "Reflecting on my failure to build a billion-dollar company." And I apologize to the author, Sahil Lavinia, for mispronouncing your name. I'm an idiot. I don't know how to say things. So I read this, saw this. Okay, well, I guess we've all, almost all of us have failed to build billion-dollar companies, right? I mean, it's kind of, you know, sort of extent. I'm like, well, who is this person? What have they done? And then you start off with the first line. "In 2011, I left my job as a second employee at Pinterest before I vested any of my stock to work on what I thought would be his life's work."
Oh boy.
Wow.
Well, the company he went on to create is, you know, well known in some circles, but it's one of these things that we can get into why it didn't build or did or couldn't grow beyond. But it is a real company that does helpful things, which is Gumroad, which was back then was an early attempt at like helping artists sell things, T-shirts, things like that, with the idea that you don't have to create your own e-commerce site, whatever. We'll give you a link. We make it easy for you to sell things.
Yeah, they'll make you a website. And that's what Gumroad does. And e-commerce stuff. I've heard the – I feel like I've seen people sell stuff on Gumroad. I don't know if I've purchased anything, but then that becomes a creator issue and not quite a platform issue. But I've at least heard the name Gumroad. Maybe there's a chance I've bought something.
Yeah, so it's – and I would say that might be part of – why their growth maybe was never as much as it could have been. Like a shot, like they were kind of like an early version of, or and maybe I don't know when Shopify actually started, but like around Shopify, but like for online creators, people like this who are selling digital stuff, but you could do physical. So it was just an easier approach towards doing this. And the goal was for the company to grow considerably, like any company. And he actually got, he announced it on like Hacker News, had 50,000 people in one day go check it out. And he started to have people go on board. And it started to grow. And they actually got venture capital. They got like a million dollar investment in that. And I think they got another million investment in it. But there's a very interesting thing. When you get venture capital, you hear like, you know, somebody wants to give me $1 million for my company, you know, and I, you know, it's like, okay. Here's the thing, is they invest $1 million in your company and they get by 10% of your company, you've got to prove that you are now going to become a $10 million company, meaning whatever you're making now, it's not why they bought it. They invested in you because they want growth. What that means, that $1 million, you know, doesn't go into your bank and you're like, hey, I sold somebody part of my company. That money goes into hiring employees and trying to expand. And so Gumroad expanded. They expanded their office spaces. They hired, you know, a bunch more employees. And they had growth, and if you look at the chart that shows the you know how the steady rate, you see, you know, what looks like nice steady upwardly moving growth, but it's not enough. It's not enough growth to justify venture capital funding. You know, if you can, let me see if I can scroll down so I can see the timeline there. And that was one of the things he talked about was, you know, they had over a, you know, a 3-year period, you saw steady growth, but then they had, when they're running out of the money from the venture capital, the money they had in the bank, because they weren't profitable and you had this many employees, then you ran into a point where you're looking at, oh man, in 3 months' time, we're not going to be able to make our rent or pay employee salaries. So what do? You let go of 75% of the staff and figured out how to keep things going and kept it going. Today, the company's real. It's still functioning, but it's not a high growth rate company. He was one of the venture capitalists that sold them back their percentage of the company for like a dollar. And now he runs it, as he describes, it's like a lifestyle. They call it a lifestyle company, these things, where it's basically, it makes you money. It supports some other people to be that, but it's not a thing that's a high growth company, not a thing that's going to be, you know, high, you know, become a target of venture capital. So.
Wow. So, where are we at now? Like, is it just running flatlined or folded or?
No, it runs. It's still there. It's just, it's the idea that he said, okay, I'm not going to, his goal was he wanted to build a billion-dollar company, like a big billion-dollar company. Now he realizes this company's never going to grow at a rate will justify it to be a billion-dollar company. It's going to make X amount a year, maybe a slight improvement, but it's not going to go beyond, you know, that. It's never going to make enough money to justify being a billion-dollar company. But then he realizes, hey, I provide a service for creators, for people who need to sell stuff. I'm doing a really useful thing. I'm paying my bills. My employees are paid. We have a cool thing here. It's not going to be the next Google or PayPal or something like that. But it's not bad to not be that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think there is that, and maybe it's a Silicon Valley echo chamber thing where it's just like, you know, all your friends are doing the billion-dollar companies. That must be why you're in business, is to have it be $1 billion. Meanwhile, a multi-million-dollar company that is an engine that runs on its own that you don't have to deal with. You know, it's like not all annuities have to. I mean, it could be just an annuity. It can make you a steady cash flow of $500,000 of profit a year, and you get to own the whole thing. And good for you.
Yep.
Ain't nothing wrong with that. Well, that's a fight. Then now you can go off and build whatever other thing.
This also builds off of the CNBC article from a couple weeks back about Patreon. The Jack Conti from Patreon said, hey, you know, we make a profit and we make a lot of money, but not enough for investors. And so we're going to be rolling out more features to try to pull more money out of people, which is unfortunate because Patreon is otherwise a very successful, profitable company. But if you're an investor and Patreon is not growing in the way that you want, then that puts the business at jeopardy.
Yeah, and it really is putting it in jeopardy because I know exactly nobody who's really excited about Patreon.
New Patreon features.
Yeah. although Justin had a point. He said there's tons of features that he would like to see. He wants a button that says handle my taxes. Like just literally press this button and they will withhold a certain amount of the money. They have their own CPAs. They'll do the heavy lifting. So later on, you just press other buttons. Sure. It's like, take another 5% for that. Great.
Yeah. Big campaigns on Patreon that would be a worthy reason for Patreon to take a percentage cut.
Yeah.
More than like trying to get into the saturated merchandise game.
Agreed.
We've seen them make acquisitions for last year.
And you could even, you know, one thing that's universal about creatives is that they don't tend to love the nuts and bolts of tax stuff. Sure. And so my guess is you could have that be a fairly high margin add-on that people would be like, I like the peace of mind. I like knowing that the tax thing is handled.
Yeah. And especially if you're doing quarterly taxes, which, you know, if you're a new creative getting into a system like Patreon, you would be unfamiliar with or just unaccustomed to. If you had a system that helped you out with that, then yeah, I think that would be a big value add. And continue, like, you know, Justin was talking about, well, Patreon should be a bank, and
yeah,
that would be a very bank-like thing to do. Financial services.
Yeah, that's I was totally unaware that this other article, that was what this influenced this. And it's, you know, skimming through there, like, I would, you know, listen, we love Patreon, we love the do, but when they talk about, like, you know, if they want to be able to make more out of the reduce Patreon's generous 90% payout model. And it's like,
that's what makes Patreon great.
They don't host. They don't have to provide, you know, bandwidth. They don't have to really do a lot of these things. And so I come from the point of view, like, what are you doing to justify more? You know, like, and again, they want to provide more services, but it's like, you know, getting 10% of every podcaster income revenue stream coming in there that you can make it in there, like, sounds to me like a wonderful business model. That sounds like a great business model. And I think if the tools were better and the experiments was better, that they would probably have much more growth. You know, but
I mean, nutty idea. They don't need to. They don't need growth. Expand like in.
Well, but then you get into venture capital.
They're running out.
They
can't. They're saying that they won't be sustainable. That, like,
well, specifically, they said they can't grow to please their investors. That's the whole thing. Is like, apparently between the lines, what they're saying is, if we just, you know, reduced our staff and just, you know, did our quiet little bank thing and just were the way everybody got paid, then they would be fine. But we have investors who want growth, and the only way for us to grow is to start tacking on a lot of crap that it sounds like people at first blush don't want. And so, you know, I don't know. it seems like more rocky times are ahead for Patreon.
Well,
of their own devising.
Is, you know, when you take on investors, you have other people who are investors. Another word for a co-owner. So
yep.
You know,
I mean, they get to say, they're like, no, I gave you money because you have to grow it into a lot more money. I didn't get it so I could see a measly few percentage return on my investments.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think there's a version of it where they figure out how to be sustainable and keep doing what they're doing. I look at it and I'm like, Patreon is, it's an amazing nexus of where it can be and what it could be, but you know, are we looking at the company that came, you know, are we looking at Friendster and waiting for the better model to come along?
Mm. Well, and like you mentioned earlier, like Patreon is, at least the way it is now, is a very scalable business just technically, right? Like the heaviest hosting that they deal with is audio for like these, for the podcasts and stuff. And hosting and bandwidth are only going to get cheaper. That is a service that scales very, very well compared to something like YouTube, which is like constantly hosting free videos that are expensive and require a lot of maintaining between apps and content. And it's unfortunate when a simple business plan like this has to when that's not enough.
Yeah,
and it's hard. I mean, you don't know. Nobody knows what the future is going to be. And you can have what makes sounds like a great business plan initially. And then, you know, there's what you set out to do. There's what you have to do to get by. Then there's what people want you to do. And, you know, what your investors want, what your creators want. So, yeah. I'm glad that it exists. I hope they figure things out. But it is, you know, both of these are sort of, you know, things to think about when you're planning your ambitions and small scale businesses, you know, when I started writing magic books. I had to say, like, what's my goal? Where is this going to go for me? And I knew, like, I would write them because I liked writing them, but it wasn't something that I wanted to have be my full-time job. I didn't want to become a full-time magic publisher. You know, I didn't want to spend my time doing that. You know, as a novelist now, I like to write books. You know, I like to write these. What's my goal? I'm like, oh, I want to put out 2 or 3 books a year, promote them, and then do other stuff. And, yeah. You know, that's fine. I'm not at publishing conventions. I'm not pushing it. You know, I push my books, but other than that, I'm not pushing my career. I'm not, you know, telling my agent to get me meetings to go pitch screenplays and stuff.
Well, you know, and the other thing too is that, you know, when you're an independent creator, you often have multiple different projects, and each one is like starting a little miniature business. And what you want to do, you don't want to have one fire hose of money, because when that one engine breaks, you have no money. What you want are dozens of trickles of the ability that any one of them can go sideways, and it doesn't affect the others. And I would imagine at the larger scale, I'd rather have 12 businesses that make, you know, $2 million a year than one business that, you know, makes 50.
Yeah. I mean, we should all be lucky enough to have that choice. But the thing I think about is, I do think, like, what if I put 100% of my effort into this? Like, if I put 100% of my effort into writing, like, what would it be? Like, okay, I can only sell so many books under Andrew Main. I'd probably come up with another name to go write under and do that and try to replicate some of my success there and do what, you know, people like, you know, Michael Crichton and Stephen King had done, which is, if you're a high output writer, was just do that. That would be the thing I would do, because, you know, I've had a pretty good, you know, every other, you know, 1 out of 3 books goes crazy. You know, the new titles I launch goes like ballistic as far as popularity. So it's like, man, like, maybe I could do that with a different name or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that would be the thing I think about, is like, I'm giving up to pursue these other things. Like, maybe I'm giving up more success.
Right.
You know?
Well, and certainly leaning into whatever is proving the most successful at any given time, you know, makes sense, and figuring out ways to up that bandwidth, I think, is works.
Yeah, that's tough, because there are some types of creative endeavors that you need a certain amount of your dedication of time to really start to get the wheel rolling.
Yeah, I mean, I it's funny because I say this, because, like, I mean, I've been very lucky in publishing, very, very, like, right now, Naturalist is the number one thriller on Amazon, right? And Murder 3 has been doing incredible, right? And I'm very, very lucky for that. But all but I'm with people, I go like, all right, I did this part-time. What if I did full-time? What if I did that, because like, this is great, but should I be pushing hardcovers? Should I be in all the airports or whatever? That's the thing you think about is like, okay, now that I know I can do this,
is that are you not doing hardcovers, or I thought you were?
Paperbacks.
Oh, got it. Man, for some reason.
Yeah, I have like four in hardcovers, but I don't have like here. Like I'm not, most of my sales is ebooks, which I'm thrilled with. Like I don't, but you sit there and you go like, oh well, what if?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Well, in some of those bigger plays, I don't know how this specifically interacts with your path, Andrew, but some of that stuff, if you're an author, you would want or need, you might need to lean on a publisher to handle doing manufacturing and putting books in stores.
There's like, if I'm saying like, for me, higher growth would be like, I have a great relationship with my publisher here, and I have a great relationship with a couple other publishers internationally. And I'm saying that, like, I think about like, oh, well, what should I be doing? So you just sort of sit there and go like, what is that?
Yeah.
Anyhow, I digress.
So, AIM Medium. that's our suggestion.
Sponsored by medium.com.
Yeah. But nothing wrong with organically figuring out, how big something wants to be.
And we've talked before on this show, I'm sure, of how digital technologies have made it easier to get into creative fields without needing, immediate buy-in from a publisher, from a record label, from, a TV studio, right? Like the ability to go out and make music and films and go write and publish things on your own has made it easier. Like I'm glad to hear that Gumroad is still going to be around, because it sounds mm-hmm. like, it is another option in terms of like the digital marketplace of content.
Yeah. Don't be afraid. If you have an idea, try it. Nobody knows the shape or what the scale these things would be. Gumroad was a company that people thought, hey, this could be huge, and it ended up being a viable company that's not a high growth rate company. Then you had companies like Airbnb, which many people are like, no, this is ridiculous, nobody's going to do this. And now Airbnb is worth like valued at like $30 billion or something.
So amazing.
Gosh.
Nobody knows anything. And it really is, you can, some ideas might be really inherently stupid, but maybe not. But ultimately, your passion's got to be the thing that drives it. I had a friend that, made out pretty well with a startup, an internet startup that did reviews and stuff. And I'm like, what happened? He's like, well, he said, I started it years ago with like three friends. And then we went off and did our own thing, but one guy kept it going. One guy kept working on it, kept going, it grew and grew and grew. Then like Amazon or somebody came along and bought it. And then, he got a good payout, but it was because one guy had the passion to keep at it. So,
yeah.
Any picks?
Did I already talk last week that I was reading Start With Why?
No.
No.
So I've made a habit that I think is a good habit in general, although it would be problematic for our show and all the picks that we give. But when I listen to a podcast and I trust the person on the podcast, and whenever they mention a book that they think I should read, I try to just immediately press pause on that podcast and go read the book. And in this case, I was listening to Under the Influence, the CBC show about marketing and advertising, and he did an episode on his book picks, and this is from about 10 years ago, but it's called Start With Why. And if you picture a three-circle bullseye, the outermost ring is what you do, the middle ring is how you do it, and then the center is why you do it. And most businesses focus on the outer ring first and then sort of just, wing it when you get to the center. For example, what do you do? We make computers. How do you do it? We ship directly to customers, so we save you money. Why do you do it? I don't know, because you probably need computers. We're Dell. Whereas Apple completely flips that on its head. They start with why. They're like, we're out to change the world. We're out to empower those who want to shake up the status quo. Sure. How do we do it? By, you know, giving you the tools to change the planet. Why and what do we do? Yeah. Oh, I guess, I don't know, I guess we sell computers until it no longer is computers. Then it becomes MP3 players. Then it becomes phones. Yeah. So you notice, like, the what they do is all over the map, and it doesn't matter because their why has always remained exactly the same.
Oh, that was in, wasn't that in Made to Stick? Also working from your principal message and expanding out. Because I remember the anecdote about Southwest. Maybe it's not from Made to Stick, but it's an anecdote about Southwest. And,
yeah.
And you know, they want to be the cheapest.
Well, and their why was, we want to empower the little guy to be able to get around, and the how we do it is by offering low fares. Mm-hmm. The what we do is offer something better than your car or a bus.
Sure. Well, this specific anecdote was like, hey, you know, we have these low fares. It would only cost us X amount to add meals for long flights, and because they want to be a low cost ticket, they said, no, we're not going to do meals because that's just going to raise the price of the ticket. And what we're trying to do is have low ticket prices. So, you know, starting with a concept and a principle is, I mean, that's perfect advice, you know, for anyone starting anything, even outside of just business models. If you're working on anything, when you have the message in mind, then you know where to go from there, from what you're trying to convey, rather than trying to work just from a strictly financial element.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's solid.
This is near and dear to my heart. I'm a big, big, big fan of that with anything. When I sit down to write a book, I go, why? Why is this book? Why am I writing this book? What's the character supposed to do? What's the goal here? You know, what's this? So when I'm halfway into it, I know, I'm not going to go down this alley because that's not what this is about. Businesses, everything. I think it applies to so many things that I love the idea of the why. I get that, like, when I'm, you know, writing, in the middle of writing, I'll be like, what, you know, my version of that, like, what's next? Because what's true to what we're trying to do?
Yeah.
So
do I have a pick? I have a little pick. This is not a business pick, but this is a game that I started playing recently. There is a new tactical game out on it's on the Switch and on consoles and PC and stuff called Wargroove. If you were into games like Advance Wars, which are, you know, these tactics-based battlefield games, this looks a lot like that, except instead of being like tanks and futuristic stuff, it's fantasy themed. But it looks really cool, and it plays nice on the Switch. So that's my pick, Wargroove.
Cool.
My pick, and I mentioned this earlier in Weird Things, is, hey, if you're ever looking for kind of a cool stream of stories, go to news.ycombinator.com, Hacker News. Hacker News has been, just a great little stream of, you know, cool items.
Oh, yeah. So. Was there anything you've seen on there recently, or and is this all tech stuff?
It generally leans to be tech, you know, tech related, tech science, things like this. You know, it could be tech, science, business. So this is by Y Combinator, which is, you know, one of the biggest startup accelerators, one of the first ones, and, you know, was their own sort of site. So you get a lot of people who are interested in tech and other related things who come in there and, you know, post articles and stuff on there. So I participate here in a little bit and a little bit on, like, you know, one of the Reddit forums, which you can probably guess which one. You know, it's pretty kind of a neat source of stuff.
That's cool. I always feel like I see Y Combinator threads pop up every once in a while, and that Medium about Gumroad started with a Y Combinator thread in 2011. Look at that.
Groovy.
Solid.
Huzzah.
Awesome.
Huzzah.
Hey, good show, everybody.
All right, gentlemen.
Good deal.
We're gonna head out.
I got works to do.
Okay, get ready for Chord Killers. You doing any more streams? I saw you were streaming over the weekend, Andrew, on Twitter.
I might do a few more. Actually, I think I'm the Chord Killers guest today, right?
Oh, that's right, you're on Chord Killers.
Oh, fantastic. Cool. So
we'll talk
that's
to you
at
in a couple,
four, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, cool.
For Pacific.
All right, I'll see you soon.
Yeah, we'll talk.
See y'all there.
We'll talk to you later then, Andrew. And everybody, we'll see you later. Bye, guys.